You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Blue Jays reporter Gregor Chisholm, who is in New York City. We're live in person doing this podcast, Gregor, as you heading back to Toronto here today, I guess, but nice of you to stop by.
Thanks for having me.
I don't know if we've ever done one of these in person, but let's get right to it. And a lot going on with the Blue Jays, but also a lot going on with Team USA and the World Baseball Classic. They win it all. First time Team USA has won the World Baseball Classic. Marcus Stroman wins the MVP. I'm not exactly sure how that works. I guess he was MVP of the final because he took a no-hitter into the sixth inning, ends up allowing one hit, strikes out three, and really was the story of that game as Team USA wins 8-0 over Puerto Rico. Watching that game I think you were in Canada at the time. I'm not sure how much the Canada fans were still involved in watching the World Baseball Classic, but what a neat moment for a Blue Jay.
Yeah, it really was, and it really kind of continues the stage of what he set early on in his career, which is he's starting to earn a reputation very early on of being kind of a big game pitcher. We saw it last year in the American League wildcard game against Baltimore. We saw it the year before when he came back from knee surgery to return in September and then become a really key member alongside David Price of that postseason rotation. The World Baseball Classic stage was his latest coming out party, and the Blue Jays are certainly hoping for more of that this season. The thing that I found kind of interesting about his performance in the WBC is we saw a lot more of the experimentation that he was doing last year with some of the hitches in his delivery, kind of pausing near the top and almost in the same mold as Johnny Cueto. And that's something he worked on last spring. He didn't really implement it much during the regular season, but he seems to be more comfortable with that. And it's just another thing he can use to kind of mess with the hitter's timing at the plate.
Seems like he's ready to go as far as the season goes. I would think, he gets one more start as far as Grapefruit League action before opening day?
Yeah, exactly. And it'll probably just be one of those. He'll probably ease into it a little bit, probably see his innings drop a little bit, just as kind of one final preparation for the start of the regular season. But certainly, he was one of the few guys in that rotation who started camp early. And the reason was because of that WBC. The Jays gave a lot of their other starters a little bit more of a delayed start. But there's no question that he's now ready to go after that WBC.
So he looks locked in. Aaron Sanchez, one of the guys you mentioned that got a late start, but things seem to be coming together for him as well.
Yeah, they really do, and I think the Jays will start with him probably as their fifth starter, and that has nothing to do with his skill level, obviously. It's just a little bit of an opportunity to because of the fact that he had a bit of a by design delayed start to the spring, gives him a little bit more time to get ready for the start of the season. And he's not under an innings limit like he was a year before, but that doesn't mean they're going to let him go without any kind of restrictions this year, and this is one way to early on just kind of have a little bit of a delayed start, monitor his innings. But he's rounding into form, and even though he starts as the number five guy, you can really look at him as the ace of that.
Yeah, and it'll end up working out that way, I guess. After that first time through, it'll be him and then Stroman, I guess, after that, and there, so that will come together. Another Blue Jay that was involved in the World Baseball Classic, Jose Bautista, part of that Dominican team that was on track to maybe get to the final, but then they end up getting knocked off by Puerto Rico. He missed the last game for the Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic and then sat out a game returning to Toronto. But he's in the lineup today as we record this on Friday, and he already has a double. So it seems like the stiff back is behind them. Any lingering concerns about that as far as just being a back injury?
Well, I think there is, just simply as you touched on the nature of the injury itself and just the fact that Bautista's coming off a pretty injury-plagued season. He arrived in camp looking very, very good. He got off to a very good start at the WBC as well. So any kind of injury, it comes with the risk of that being a setback, especially when you have backs that seem to take a really long time to heal and for those things to go away. But the fact that he is appearing in spring games obviously means the Jays don't have any immediate concerns. And they'll just have to hope that it doesn't resurface and become a nagging problem throughout the year. But as of right now, everything is fine. He'll be good to go for opening day.
Before we go back to the medical report, because there's other guys we have to check in on as far as the Jays go and opening day quickly approaching, we've got to touch on John Gibbons. He gets the extension, not a secret throughout the spring, but everybody knew it was heading in this direction. It seemed like there was never any concern from him or the team. It was just, hey, we're working on it, we'll get there. And now it seems like it's there, and a club option for 2020 as well. But I would think heading into the season, a team that's had so much success, just from Gibbons' position, leading a team of players, it's got to be better to be leading a team of players when you have a contract like this as opposed to being in the final year.
Yeah, no, you never really, because of the questions would start almost right away if the Jays got off to a slow start, and now this kind of avoids that. You never want to have a manager who goes into that lame duck type status in his final year. And you know, that was something we talked to Ross Atkins about at the end of the season news conference last year, about his comfort level of having a manager going into a potential walk year. And he said at that time that the Jays expected to get something done. They were going to reach out to Gibbons, and it was a little bit slow to develop, but I think that was mostly because Gibbons said it was okay for it to be slow to develop. The Jays had a lot of things to do this offseason. He said, wait for me, like, we can take care of this later. We can take care of it in spring. That's what the Blue Jays are doing now, that after all the other offseason planning got in place, they can take care of Gibbons, and obviously it came together pretty quickly.
That certainly benefits him for them to take care of the players first as well. His success depends on them more than anyone. All right, back to some injuries. Josh Donaldson is playing spring training games again. That's good to see. Is it full steam ahead for Donaldson?
Yeah, it really is, and that's some really encouraging news, obviously, for the Blue Jays, because that was kind of a scare very early on. Whenever you have a guy in the first 2 weeks of camp go down, especially someone of Donaldson's caliber, there's some fear there. But you know, he's been looking good at the plate for a while. He was hitting in minor league games well before he took the field. Then he seemed to be fine in the field. He made a really nice play on a short hop in the Boston game on Friday. So it seems like he's full go defensively, offensively, and has just enough time to get the number of bats he'll probably need. I mean, the fact that he really started to ramp it up over the last week gives him a couple solid weeks of every day at bats, and for someone like Donaldson, that should be plenty.
And then Devin Travis also making his way back, playing some minor league games, now getting to the real spring training games. And Donaldson's obviously huge when you're talking about a guy who's won a Most Valuable Player award, and you can easily argue he's the best player on this team. But Travis, as far as the roster goes and the lineup goes and how it's set up, maybe more falls on him as far as the organization of this team for opening day. So how big is it for him to be getting in there? And a little over a week to go, is that enough time for Travis?
Yeah, it's huge that he's back in the field and particularly playing second base and running the bases seemingly well in his first spring game. And all those are encouraging signs. And this is a bit of a surprise development, because just 2 weeks ago it seemed like there was almost going to be no way that he was going to be able to avoid a DL stint at the beginning of the season. Now all the signs seem to be suggesting that he will be ready for opening day. And as you touched on, I mean, he's really kind of the building block in terms of the overall lineup, because the Jays don't have a leadoff man without him there. He's not your prototypical leadoff guy, but he's someone who's going to put up a high average. He's someone who's going to be able to get on base for the heart of that order. If they didn't have him, then you'd have to turn to someone like Kevin Pillar, who doesn't have the on-base percentage you want to see at the top of the lineup. And really, it would have taken some creativity and some experimentation to get that done. But Travis just slots in there perfectly, and that fills a big hole. If he wasn't in the lineup, the Jays would have a bit of an offensive hole at second base as well. So if they don't have to worry about that, that's obviously good news. And for Travis personally, this year he needs to stay healthy. I mean, he's been injured the last 2 years, spent lengthy stints on the disabled list. He needs to get rid of that reputation. If he can start the year on time and stay healthy this season, that will go a long way towards doing that.
Do you think he plays pretty much all week just to get the at-bats in? I know they say spring training is the length that it is for starting pitchers, not for players. But some guys take longer than others. Do you think he'll be in the lineup pretty much every day leading up to spring training, maybe one off day, as opposed to other guys who will get some more rest?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes a day off on Saturday after playing today, but after that, I think they probably will push him, and that probably includes the series in Montreal when they go up there. Sometimes the regulars get a bit of a break up there. I wouldn't be surprised if he's someone who's in there for most of the game so he can get a high number of at-bats. But it should be enough time. It's certainly not ideal. You'd like to see him have a little bit more time to get ready, especially as a younger player compared to a veteran like Donaldson. But the fact that he is now being mentioned as a possibility for opening day is obviously, as we said, there's so many moving pieces on that 25-man roster that come together when Travis is healthy.
One more thing to touch on with you, and that is Jared Saltalamacchi is the backup catcher on this team, obviously behind Russell Martin. There's no knuckleballer on. How does it work out? I guess there's an article on BlueJays.com about kind of that they're still trying to figure out how they're going to work him in as far as Russell off day, Saltalamacchi time. Where do you think that kind of settles in?
I wouldn't be surprised if at some point the Jays kind of pick a starter where Saltalamacchi becomes a pretty regular guy, not to the full-time extent that it was with Dickey and Josh Tolley. I don't think the Jays want to be painted into that type of corner, but in the past we've seen Deion Navarro develop a pretty strong relationship with Marco Estrada. So they, I think once the season gets underway and once they get through the first few weeks and they see what kind of rapport these guys are developing, I think you'll probably see that a little bit more. But I think what the Jays like the most about having Salta and Maki around is that flexibility that they do have now. Because Martin was so tied into that schedule in the past, and you really, it didn't matter if it was a Friday night game followed by a Saturday afternoon game. If Dickey wasn't in the equation, Martin had to make those quick turnovers. Now I don't think you're going to see very many games where Martin starts on Friday night and then has to play again on Saturday morning with that quick turnaround. I think the Jays will look to do something where they'll involve Salta and Maki in there, and I think that's going to be good for Martin because we saw him wear down a little bit during the stretch run last year, and the Jays obviously want to avoid doing that. He had his highest workload last year, I think about 6 years, and for a guy who's getting into his mid-30s behind the plate, that's something you would like to avoid. You'd like to see that decrease by probably at least 10 games.
All right, excellent stuff. Hey, safe travels back down to Florida.
Thank you, appreciate it.
All right, for Gregor Chisholm, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster and MLB.com Orioles reporter Brittany Giroli here as spring training is kind of starting to wind down. A little over a week to go until opening day. We'll talk about some different stuff. Chance Sisko still up with the Major League Club right now. We'll handle some of the injuries the Orioles continue to face. But Brittany, I wanted to start this podcast really the way we ended the last one, which was talking about the World Baseball Classic. Team USA wins it. Which means the Orioles get their players back. But Adam Jones was a huge part of Team USA, really from start to finish. I mean, if you look at the entire tournament, I mean, I know Marcus Stroman was MVP of the World Baseball Classic as far as the final goes, but if Team USA had to pick an MVP for the entire tournament, I would think Adam Jones would get the nod. Have you gotten a chance to talk to him since he's returned?
We haven't. He's kind of popped in and out. Not playing today because it's a road game, but I expect he'll probably play at some point this weekend, get back into those games. But I agree with you. It's really cool to see. I think he's a guy who Orioles fans appreciate, but on a national level, people certainly know who he is. And I think players and his peers have a lot of respect for him. And I think what the WBC did was just kind of elevate him to a new group, to a new fan base. He just has a lot of intangibles. And I know people kind of comment on, you know, his defensive metrics and advanced stats, and but there are some things that you just can't take into account with that kind of stuff. You know, the heart, the grit, the determination, being able to step up in the clutch. Those are all things he's really good at. We saw all of that, I think, on display with Team USA.
One of maybe the it moment of that tournament, the semifinal, Team USA beats the Dominican Republic. Manny Machado hits a shot to center field, and Jones basically goes into the crowd almost and robs him of the home run. It was a great moment that was made even cooler because here's two teammates that come together in a play like this, and Machado had the classy tip of the cap out to Jones as he kind of shruggingly went back to the dugout. And I know Buck Showalter even talked about the fact that he stayed up late and got to see that moment. What a moment it was.
Yeah. I mean, it was just fantastic. And I can't remember if we talked about it the last time I was on or not, but that's what was so cool about the WBC, I think, is representing your country and just seeing all these guys from different teams kind of come together. And that catch was fantastic. And you know, Jones said afterwards, I believe, to the media that he wasn't even sure he had it. He was just trying everything he could do to catch that ball. And it, I agree with you. It really was the defining moment. That photo circulated all across the media. It was really, really cool to see.
Yeah, and if people don't know the photo you're speaking of, it's the shot of him basically almost in the crowd, and you can see all the faces of the fans right there around him, either reaching for the ball or looking at him, or the different facial expressions is fantastic, and it was really an amazing photo. All right, on to the current Orioles that are getting ready to play the season here, and guys that are and aren't, and Chris Tillman obviously isn't going to be ready for opening day. Has the team decided just how they're going to handle that situation and not having their ace to start the season?
No, they really haven't. The good news is that because of all these off days in April, they only need a fifth starter twice, and they don't need that fifth starter until April 15th. So I would be surprised if they say, hey, this is the guy who's pitching April 15th when this team breaks camp. Knowing the Orioles, knowing manager Buck Showalter, there'll be a lot of roster maneuvering before they get to the 15th. It will depend on who's healthy, the matchups, how things are going. It could be two different guys that would be pitched in that fifth starter slot the month of April. They could give different guys spot starts. And a lot of it also is going to depend on how long they realistically think they're going to go without Chris Tillman. Is it going to be just the month of April? Is it going to be longer than that? So they do have candidates. All those guys are still in camp. You know, guys like Tanner Wilson and Mike Wright, Jason Aquino, Gabriel Yanoa. They do have guys that they're considering. Obviously, none of these options are as good as Chris Tillman. But again, I think it's something that we might not know when this team heads north. It very, very much so looks like it's going to be a day before type of announcement at Camden Yards.
You mentioned some names as far as that spot goes, and some of those names are also involved in just kind of filling out this bullpen as well, and there's more names as well. You have a story on Orioles.com right now about all the different guys in play as far as the bullpen goes, and I guess that's going to be the same, right? I mean, Buck loves to kind of keep that train rolling between AAA and the major leagues. How many of these guys that are vying for bullpen spots could be up and down early in the season?
Exactly. That's what makes it so tough to predict, is because they can break camp with four starters and extra guys and make all these moves, send guys down. They've got a lot of flexibility in that roster, which was something they really wanted because they lacked it last year, the ability to send guys out and get fresh arms in. There's just so much at play here that it's almost impossible to predict who's going to be on that opening day roster for those final couple spots. Again, I think matchups are going to play into it heavily. And the thing that the Orioles do so well that other teams don't is they play one game at a time. They say, what roster do we need to win tonight's game? And if that requires a move or two, they're going to make it. So really tough to gauge what they're going to end up doing for that reason. I mean, there's just so much at hand, and they manipulate that roster so well.
Zach Britton is a guy who's finally getting back to it. Obviously, the tweak, and he was out a little bit. Does he feel like he's on track? Obviously, getting ready for the season for a closer who's going to pitch one inning a night is a little different than a starter who has to build up to 70, 80, 90 pitches. How is Britton feeling at this point?
Yeah, I think, you know, they feel optimistic that he's going to be fine for opening day. He's going to be the guy. Like you said, spring training is really long, and it's essentially for starting pitchers so that they can get all those reps in, build their arms up, get X amount of games. If you're a position player, if you're a relief pitcher, you could probably get ready in a couple weeks, a week or two tops. And Ryan Flaherty's back in the lineup for them today, and he didn't seem worried about being ready for opening day, which is, you know, obviously a week plus away. But I think for a guy like Britton, not being in pain, throwing, not having any setbacks was key, and hopefully he's going to be the guy that he was last year for them. Now, he's pitching a lot at Twin Lakes Park. He hasn't pitched a lot in major league games, so it's tough to see. I haven't seen him grow. It's tough to say how good he is. Does he look as good as he looked last spring? All things like that are kind of unanswered right now, but the health is there, which is probably the most important thing at this point in the spring.
The health is not there yet for Seth Smith and Chris Dickerson. Still out. How about the progress on those two guys?
Yeah, kind of slow. And with a guy like Seth Smith, who you basically had penciled in for the opening day roster, it really kind of complicates things. Does this open up an extra slot? Does this mean, you know, that Trey Mancini makes this team? Does this maybe open up a spot for a Rule 5 guy for a couple days? Again, there's a lot of stuff at play, and that Seth Smith injury more than Chris Dickerson, who came in trying to win a spot on this team. Seth Smith was a guy they acquired, so Giovanni Gallardo, he was supposed to be a very important part of this outfit. So this is something that he's dealt with in the past. He didn't seem too worried about it, but it's lingered much longer than he expected and the Orioles expected. So as this continues to progress, he starts to wonder, okay, what's the backup plan here? And I think it's going to open up some slots in that outfield mix, which was already kind of a crowded mix. And in terms of news, Tim, there's not a whole lot of news on either one of those guys. I mean, they continue to kind of progress at an okay rate, I guess. But when you're looking at where they are, the games are dwindling here. So they really need to get back on the field and to get some at-bats. And whether that's at Twin Lakes Park or in these major league games, I think they'll probably be in the minors games in the event that something goes wrong and they have to be placed on the DL. But To me, the Seth Smith one is concerning. He hasn't looked good all spring, and then he got hurt. What are you going to get out of him this year? Nobody's really too sure.
One more thing I wanted to touch on with you, Brittany, and that is Chance Cisco, who eventually is going to end up playing in the minor leagues this season, but they've kept him up with the major league club. They've obviously had a lot of roster cuts to this point, but Cisco getting plenty of exposure, I guess, is the word, and I think that's the word they used, right, that they just want him to get as much major league competition as he can this spring before they send him down.
Yeah, I think it really shows him how close they think he is. He's not overwhelmed or overmatched. He's done a lot of work with catching coach John Russell to become better behind the plate, better at receiving, better at, you know, setting up, all those things that he's going to need to do at the major league level. They've been impressed by him, by his composure. He's a guy who obviously they think very highly of. As you mentioned, they went and got Wellington Castillo. Chance Cisco is not making this team, but it's comforting to know that they think he's that close, that he's a guy who's still here, still getting his reps in, still around these major league guys, catching them, getting that experience. This is only going to be a positive. I think he's going to have a good year at AAA Norfolk. I think he's going to really start pounding down that door, and that's what they want. They don't want to graduate these guys early. Their minor league system has certainly had its challenges over the last few years. A guy like Chance Cisco, I think they know they want to do this right, and that's part of the reason why they went out and got Castillo. And keep in mind, now that Castillo's back from the WBC, Cisco can also learn from him a lot. It's really been a positive. I didn't think he'd be in camp this late, but I think it just speaks volumes as to how highly this organization values him and his readiness.
All right, great stuff, Brittany. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Yankee spring training rolling along in Tampa, and Brian Hoke actually joins us from Clearwater this morning, our MLB.com Yankees reporter. I'm Tim McMaster as the Yankees set to take on the Phillies on the Grapefruit League schedule. So some stuff to talk about, Brian. We'll get into some guys who have played well and some great pitching performances as of late, but I want to start with the injury front, and that's Didi Gregorius, and I guess every team's nightmare when you talk about the World Baseball Classic is for one of your players to take part in the event and end up getting hurt and to miss time during the regular season. That's exactly what's going to happen with Didi. He missed the semifinal for the Netherlands because of the injury. It's a strained subscapularis muscle, I believe I'm saying that right, in his shoulder. It's his throwing shoulder. And now I guess he's going to miss all of April, correct?
It looks that way, yeah. He's going to take 2 weeks off with no throwing whatsoever. Then he'll start a throwing program. And they're saying generally it's probably going to take about 6 weeks start to finish. So that knocks him out for most of April, if not all of it. And the Yankees are going to have to figure out a way to get through the first month of the season without their starting shortstop. And that is a big blow for the Yankees. I think that the injury could have probably happened if he was in camp with the Yankees. He was completing a double play. He throws hundreds of times a spring, but it's always a little tough when your player is somewhere else and you hear he gets hurt. And this is two classics now in a row for the Yankees, because if you remember, Mark Teixeira also injured himself swinging off a tee in the classic, and that pretty much derailed his entire year.
Hopefully DD makes a quicker recovery than that and can come back and stabilize things up the middle for the Yanks. You had an interesting tweet, I thought, right away after the announcement the other day of the injury itself, and that was that, hey, it could be Tyler Wade that's the guy as the Yankees try to kind of get the guy going, the 22-year-old. And you follow that up, I think, with something about the fact that, hey, maybe Tyler Wade is Ben Zobrist for the Yankees or Brock Holt for the Yankees.
They're trying to make him into that. It's something that a couple of years ago, Joe Girardi had called down to Gary Denbo, their vice president of player development, and said, hey, Brock Holt is playing every position for the Red Sox. Do we have anybody like that? And they said, we can make one. So they've been working on that with Wade for a while now, and he's been bouncing all around and playing different positions. He's played second, third, short. He's played all three outfield positions, I think pretty much everywhere except catch, pitch, and play first base. So he's got the versatility to do it. He was going to be the starting shortstop at AAA. He still may be. They haven't decided that Wade's going north with them, but I think he's closer to Yankee Stadium than a lot of other people. I think that at some point in the very near future, he's going to be helping the team whether it's as a starting shortstop or as a versatile super sub utility guy, it's a good piece to have on your team. And obviously it's something that Girardi wants. So I think at some point very soon you're going to see it.
Hasn't played above double A in his career, but he's the name that kind of flies under the radar to me. I mean, you hear about all the big prospects for the Yankees, and Tyler Wade isn't the one that you often hear in discussions.
No, but they love his makeup. He's got a good character guy, athletic, obviously. If you can play all over the field, there's a reason for that. He's got good speed. He's actually put on a little muscle this spring, so he's driving the ball a little bit better with his lower half. So all good things to say about Tyler Wade. I think that as this goes forward here, the last 10 days or 2 weeks of camp, the Yankees are going to be looking at a lot of guys, thinking about who can take over for Didi Gregorius. And they're going to be looking defense first. Anything offensively is a bonus. So you've got Ronald Torres in that mix, Ruben Tejada, Pete Cosma. Those guys are in camp as non-roster guys. But I think Tyler Wade is very much in the mix. And if he gets a few hits here and plays well, he might just force his way to New York.
I mentioned Wade not being one of those headline prospects. Gleyber Torres is one of those headline guys, a guy that obviously there's high hopes for being a premier player in the big leagues. He was sent down to minor league camp. What stood out to you during his time up with the big club this spring?
I think his maturity. I think that you've seen 20-year-olds come into big league camp before and kind of been intimidated by it, and I didn't see that at all with Torres. And it wasn't in a cocky way. It was just that he knew he belonged here. I think that you could see the skill level kind of seep through, and really he made adjustments so quickly. There was a maturity there that I think is uncommon for a 20-year-old. The Yankees talked about how the game seemed to slow down for him. It didn't speed up for him as it does for most kids who are generally out of their teens and suddenly on the field with a big league team. So I think even the fact that we were talking about that maybe he should go north with the team, that says a lot for a guy who still hasn't played one inning in double A. So he's going to go down to double A. He'll play in Trenton, and he'll get his feet wet there. But I'll be honest with you, I don't think he's going to be there very long. I think he's going to move quickly, and before very long, I think he's going to force his way to Yankee Stadium at some point.
I was going to say, if this injury to Didi Gregorius happens in July, you wonder if Torres is the guy and he gets his chance right away, right?
Yeah, I think that anything's possible. I think that they were intent that he would have to play in the Eastern League a little bit, get adapted to the cold weather, do some of that. But like I said, he went down and played against much older competition in the Arizona Fall League last year and dominated. And that's what you already told him. He said, go down to double A and dominate. And I think that if he does that, if he continues to hit the way he did this spring, he's not going to stay there very long.
And you get to experience beautiful Trenton in the spring. It's a good time. All right.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Let's move on before we get into any trouble with the state of New Jersey. All right. No hitter combined for the Yankees last week. This is something that you don't really see a lot of in the spring, although randomly in the last week around Major League Baseball, there's been a lot of runs towards this, but the Yankees actually get it done with Tanaka, Jason Shreve, and Jordan Montgomery. It's a fun side note, but it also means that there's three pitchers that pitch great for a night. Tanaka just continues to look like that ace that the Yankees certainly need him to be.
Yeah, and that's so important, especially because the rest of the starting pitching has not really lived up to expectations as far as the Yankees are concerned this spring. But they've got that one guy they can count on, and he's just been dominant. He came in today 13 and a third inning scoreless, has allowed just three hits. He's striking out everybody. He hadn't walked anybody until the last time out when he walked two against the Tigers in Lakeland. So Tanaka has been everything the Yankees could have asked for and more. I think that, hey, that's your opening day starter, and that's at least something. But they really do need to figure out the rest of their rotation there because CeCe Sabathia's had a rough spring. Pineda has stumbled a little bit. Obviously, Luis Severino has been up and down, and Brian Mitchell up and down. It's just that whole crop of guys at the back end really make you wonder who's going to step up and take. And I think it would have made their spring a whole lot easier if somebody had really just run with it. But Tanaka has, and I guess that's something when you're talking about your ace and your opening day starter.
Hope to start 1-0 and go from there. We'll see where it goes from there. All right, I just wanted to check in on a couple other guys that are having nice springs that maybe we didn't necessarily see it coming, and Billy McKinney's one of those guys. He's taken some advantage of the fact that Tyler Austin's hurt, Mason Williams hurt. McKinney, to me, the thing that surprises me is that he's still just 22 years old. Here's a guy that you remember him being a first-round pick and a highly thought-of prospect both in Oakland and the Cubs. He was in that Chapman trade as well last July, and maybe he's starting to figure it out.
Yeah, I think his stock dropped a little bit because of an injury. He fractured a kneecap fouling a ball off himself a couple years ago, and I think it had affected him a little bit on the field last year. But he has taken full advantage of this opportunity. He wasn't even on the invite roster to big league camp until Tyler Austin and Mason Williams got hurt in the first week camp. So he came over, and basically they weren't looking for a whole lot from him, just kind of take innings away from other guys and fill in. But he has really made people stand up and take attention, especially with his bat. He's got a few home runs this spring, I believe four. He's hit for power. He's got a good attitude as far as the coaching staff feels like. So he's not going to break camp with his team, but I think what he's done is remind everybody that, hey, it was more than just Gleyber Torres in that trade last July. There's more there, and I think that Billy McKinney, he's going to force his way into a lineup and obviously put up some numbers in the minor leagues, and maybe we're talking about him in a year or so.
And then James Caprillion got one shot, I guess, one appearance this spring, and he made the most of it on Thursday. Two hitless frames against Toronto. He looked really good. Obviously a high draft pick for this Yankee team that they think can move quickly, battle the injury bug a bit, but he looks like maybe he's going to get back on track this season down in the minors.
Yeah, I mean, all he's got to do is stay healthy, and I think he can follow that same program that they did in 2015 with Luis Severino. If you remember, he came up and made 11 starts at the end of the season in the big leagues. But I think that the key is staying healthy. He probably would have moved very quickly last year had he not gotten hurt. And was obviously limited to only 3 starts for Class A Tampa. But, I mean, the stuff is there. The mentality is there. Similar to Torres. You talk to Caprillion, you watch him go around his business, and you see a guy, he's dead serious about it. He laughs, he has fun, but I think that when the ball is in his hand, when he's on the mound, this guy is all business. He says he wants to be an ace, and so he's setting the bar high for himself. He believes in himself. You feel the confidence, and that's a lot of what you get in this Yankee camp. It's kids who know they belong here, and we're talking about Torres, we're talking about Caprillion. I can name a few others as well, but that's encouraging for the Yankees, especially when they're going into this baby bomber process here and really focusing on the future. It seems like there's kids who want to be a part of it, who know they can be a part of it, and they're determined to make that happen.
Great stuff, Brian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Rays spring training continues, although not for too much longer, less than 2 weeks, a little over 1 week until opening day. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Rays reporter Bill Chastain, and plenty to talk about, Bill. We'll get into Kevin Kiermaier's new contract and Colby Rasmus on the field, different things like that. Jake Bowers continues to rake, I guess would be the word, for the way he was playing in the spring before he got sent to minor league camp. But let's start with the rotation, which has been set for the beginning of the season. No surprise, I don't think. Chris Archer, the opening day guy, although obviously he wants to build on a season that didn't exactly go his way throughout in 2016. But Archer, heading into the spring, you would have thought would have been the opening day guy, and he gets the nod. No surprise, right?
No, and he's really pitched well, too. If you look what he did, even just at the World WBC, of course, seemed like he was way ahead of everybody when he got to camp, and just, you know, he takes care of himself and does all the right stuff. So he really, really looks good. Just like you say, it's not a surprise at all.
And he was obviously a big contributor for that Team USA team that won the World Baseball Classic, although he wasn't there for the final. He had headed back to Rays camp, but certainly helped them get there along the way. And I think he had some nice things to say about the experience and getting to see the guys that were his teammates hoisting the trophy.
Yeah, he was really excited about it. And, you know, he gave really a lot of kudos to Marcus Stroman. You know, of course, he's friends with him. He does a lot of charity things with him when he's up in Toronto. And so he was excited. You know, he even said, you know, he had wanted to be there at the end, but he said, you know, he couldn't have done much better than Stroman. And he's right about that. Stroman was pretty good in that final.
Yeah, Stroman taking a no-hitter into the sixth inning in that final against a loaded Puerto Rico lineup as USA won with a shutout, 8-0 over for Puerto Rico to win that. All right, the rest of the rotation, I guess the one thing that we weren't sure of was who would grab that fifth starter job. At the end of the day, it's Matt Andrews. Were you surprised at all that he was the guy, or did he earn it this spring?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, he was the fifth guy last year, and he came in as the fifth guy this year. I think, you know, a lot of people had who don't follow the team real close, you know, thought maybe it might be Jose De Leon. But I think De Leon's got a ways to go. And the only question to me was whether or not they were going to start the season with four in the rotation or five. You know, last year, like I said, Andrés basically was the fifth starter, but they sent him down because they wanted him to continue starting, and they took advantage of the off days at the early part of the schedule and just went with a four-man rotation. So this year, though, they're not. They said that never was a consideration, and Andrés is their guy.
So he'll be the fifth guy, and obviously it's an organization now that has plenty of starting depth, and Jose De Leon, one of those guys that I think eventually this season we'll probably see him at some point, whether it's because of a banged-up guy in the rotation, an injury, or just if he pitches well enough to kind of earn his way. But I think
maybe by the time his blonde hair grows out, the Puerto Rico thing, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that whole team, if anybody that watched the World Baseball Classic, they all had the blonde hair. And I think we saw more of Yadier Molina's than anybody else because he seemed to always be pulling the helmet off for some reason or another to celebrate. But, yeah, they all went bleach blonde for the World Baseball Classic. All right, so Kevin Kiermaier gets a six-year deal, $53.5 million, Bill. And this is kind of the classic move for the Rays that they do with certain players. I guess certain players that they kind of point out as cornerstones of the franchise. Evan Longoria got a deal like this when he was, in the arbitration situation well before he would be a free agent. Kevin Kiermaier gets the same thing, and it seems like everybody's just all smiles about this deal.
Yeah, and I think it's a good deal. Probably the only possible downsides, the way as hard as Kiermaier plays, you know, there's always, he probably has as good a chance to get injured as anybody, the way he runs on the walls, dives for balls. And, you ask him about it, and he basically, I can't stop doing that because that's part of who I am. But that's one consideration. And then, you know, you hope if you're the Rays that his offense will eventually approach his defense. The offense, you know, he's very athletic, so I think there probably is a good chance that he could get there offensively. But he is not there right now.
Not there offensively, but I don't even know if it's an argument anymore that he's the best center fielder in baseball when you take into account everything.
I think the main argument is whether or not he's the best defender of baseball. And yeah. I know from what I've seen he impacts so many. I've seen him impact so many games. It's almost routine watching him do the unthinkable.
Yeah, now that we see the StatCast numbers as well, and this year with StatCast, we have catch probability, and I feel like Kevin Kiermaier is going to be a catch probability superstar. Talking to Mike Petriello, one of our StatCast guys, about that kind of thing. And as good as Kiermaier was thought to be, when you look at the metrics that we have now in baseball, it actually makes him look even better, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because StatCast, the cool thing, everybody needs to go there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, push that StatCast. So it's one of those deals that obviously right now, when Kiermaier's pre-arbitration, the Rays are going to pay him a lot more than they would have had to. But down the road, you would think this deal looks like one that will benefit the Rays in the long term. So everyone's happy. Kiermaier gets the money now, and he's, let's be honest, set for life with $53.5 million. And in the long run, the Rays may end up having a team-friendly deal. All right, back to the rest of this team and kind of the health guy, the guys that are coming off injuries, the guys that are injured. Colby Rasmus came into the spring, obviously, coming off the hip surgery of the offseason. He's now back playing games. How has he looked so far, Bill?
He had a home run the other night. He's DH some. The big question is if he can get in the field by opening day, and if he can't, you're probably not going to see him on opening day. Simple as that, you know. And Cash said yesterday, that Rasmus understands that. So we'll see what happens. And they're so close to it, whether or not he's ready or not. I'm sure that if it's close, they're not going to push it if they have, you know. But they want to, you know, they feel like there'd be hamstring. It would hamstring them if he was not able to play in the field at the start of the season.
When you look at the bullpen, Brad Boxberger, doubtful for the start of the season, a right lat issues, and just that the health issues continue to kind of nag at Boxberger. How long do they hope, or I guess how quickly do they hope they can get him back after opening day?
You know, he's going to be shut down for a week and then start back again next week. So he's definitely out for opening day. Fortunately for the Rays, they do have some good options. I know I've been very impressed by Jamie Schultz all spring, and he started primarily in the minor leagues and has a 97-mile-per-hour fastball, and he's always had really good strikeouts to innings numbers, but I think you'll probably see that go up even more, a tick more from the bullpen when he can kind of pump it up. And then also they're looking at Austin Pruitt, another starter from the minor leagues, who could also make this team as a bullpen member. So some pretty good young options. And I always like to see young arms myself. So we'll see.
You're covering the right team for that, Bill. It seems like over the years you've gotten
plenty. Got the old man covering the young guys.
Jumbo Diaz was claimed by the Rays back on March 10th, but he was committed to the World Baseball Classic. So they claimed him, but they didn't really get to have him in camp. But now he's finally joined the team. Where does he fit into the organization and the bullpen and his chances of eventually being in the Major League bullpen?
Well, I think they got high hopes for him.
Yeah.
But I did, Cash did tell us today that, he wants to see a little more of him. He pitched a little bit yesterday. And, of course, he's got a pretty nice fastball, and as you would expect somebody of his size might have. But I think they want to see a little bit more. But they definitely I wouldn't rule out him being in the bullpen.
Very good. And then Jake Bowers has been sent back to minor league camp, but what a spring he had. 371, four homers, 13 RBIs, and just in his final game on Thursday had another two-run double in that one. So he hit pretty much from start to finish. Did he quicken his timeline, I guess, to the major leagues, Bill, with the way he played this spring, or is he pretty much still in the same, I guess, plan that the Rays maybe had for him?
If I was GM, I'd have him on the team. and I'll tell you what I like so much about him is, you'll see a lot of guys in spring training, they might have a hot spring, this, that, or the other, but the at-bats he has are just incredible. He walks a bunch, he really looks it over, makes the pitcher work. In fact, talking to a couple of the scouts, they were saying this guy has, major league at-bats the way he's up there, and his swing is just a thing of beauty. So, geez, the guy's 21 years old, and I say he did open some eyes, but he's going to have to probably be at Durham this year.
He also threw a runner out at the plate on Thursday. Now it was an error that led to the ball being in right field, and he was shallow, so it wasn't a super long throw. But how is his defense?
He's played a lot of first base, and then he's played more outfield now with Gillespie, being over there at first base. So he looked pretty good out there in the outfield. He has a couple of rough edges that probably needed to be sanded off. But anybody who can hit like that kid, they're going to find a position for him.
Yeah, certainly you find a space. And maybe one blessing of him heading back to the minor leagues is that he'll get to work on that defense a little more as well. All right, great stuff, Bill, as always. One more week, basically, until opening day, and the Rays will get this 2017 season underway. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Rays edition. For Bill Chastain, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Ian Brown, our MLB.com Red Sox reporter, who has made the journey north from Fort Myers to Tampa as the Red Sox and Yankees get set to do battle on Tuesday night. So we were checking in with Ian before that game. And, Ian, I guess let's start with the health stuff. We'll move on to some guys who are really having good springs, and we'll talk about the obstacle course that led to players avoiding that trip to Tampa. We'll get to that at some point in the podcast as well. But let's start with the medical report. And Drew Pomerantz, who left the game on Sunday, had some pain or tightness in his triceps. I guess Monday he felt a lot better. Is he feeling even better on Tuesday?
He is. We asked him how his bullpen session went today, and he just kind of kidded around. He said golden. So this thing could not have gone any better, because when he came off the mound Sunday, I think all of us were a little concerned. But it turns out now he thinks it was just a mechanical thing that had messed up his tricep, and he was putting too much pressure on that. And once he fixed it, he was back to normal the next day. So really just a hiccup that was nothing. So that's a great sign. But the real test for Drew will be when he pitches on Friday And, you know, he hasn't pitched well in either of his starts so far, which isn't all that surprising because he's a guy sort of building up back arm strength as the spring goes here. But at the same time, they'd like to see some encouragement and some positive signs for him. So I think he's going to start Friday and done the evening against the Blue Jays. So I think we'll know a lot more about Drew Pomerantz after that.
Kudos to the film room for, I guess he kind of noticed while watching some film that the delivery was a little bit off. So that's always good stuff during spring training. How about just his readiness factor, Ian? We're getting closer and closer to the beginning of the season. And obviously without David Price, Drew Pomerantz fits into that top five starters. But there's questions about a lot of those guys still. He's only thrown two times. Do they still think he's going to get enough innings in to be ready to go at whenever his time in the rotation comes up?
Yeah, I think, Tim, the tentative plan for Drew right now is that he would pitch the sixth game of the season, and that would be the Sunday game in Detroit, because they could finagle it where, you could bring Rick Porcello back in that Saturday game in Detroit because of the off day Tuesday, so you wouldn't need a fifth starter till the sixth game. And that's what they're going to try to ramp him up to. Now, look, they need to get him where he can throw, where he's in position to throw about 90, 95 pitches in that first start in Detroit. So that's going to be the key, is if they keep ramping him up. And I think, you know, when the Red Sox actually go north to face the Pirates to start the season, I think you could see a scenario where Drew is down in Florida pitching once more, you know, extended spring or whatever, just to keep getting that pitch count up, and then they could put him on the DL for the first, for the first five games of the year, I think, retroactive that, and then activate him on that six games. I think you probably see them break camp with an extra reliever and four starters.
All right, so another thing to keep an eye on there. Let's talk about some guys having some great springs, and Pablo Sandoval is one of them, which is encouraging for anyone who watches and follows and roots for this Red Sox club. I think you even put it in an article, Ian. You even put it out there that here's your leading candidate for AL Comeback Player of the Year. Did I read that?
Yeah, and I think that, look, to me, I feel like I'm watching Hanley Ramirez from last spring. This is what we saw from Hanley when he came in. And Tim, this is what spring training is all about, is these guys coming in, having these resurgent, you know, trying to resurrect their careers. And I think that's, again, that's one of the things I enjoy most about spring training. And you see him came in in great shape, and his bat speed is noticeably better. He's moving around far better. And but even if he was in great shape, you know, it wouldn't have meant anything if he wasn't hitting like he is. But he's really turning on fastballs and kind of looking like the Pablo of old. So I think this is a great sign. And I think that you could see him have a very good year this year. And that could be a big, they really need him. You lose David Ortiz, you really need somebody to step up. And I think Pablo is one of those people who can help fill that void left by Big Poppy.
And he hit two home runs on Saturday, a big day there for him. The power is there, as you said. As far as the figure, and he came in great shape, has that continued, Ian, now a month into spring training dieting and spring training eating? Is he keeping the weight off?
Yeah, he still looks great. And, the other day I saw him out there just on his own doing some agility drills, kind of like with one of the trainers. So obviously, whatever program he was on in the winter, he's doing his best to just keep on that program and keep that part of his daily routine. So it's obvious this guy is really driven, and I don't think he went on this whole thing to do it halfway and just like give up on it in March. I think this guy is very driven to have a good year and have a healthy year and to stay in good shape and see how that new physique, how well he can play with that.
Another infielder who's having a really nice spring is Marco Hernandez, and he's a guy that we saw, he kind of bounced up and down last year when the Red Sox needed that extra infielder. Can he make this opening day roster? Has he had that kind of spring? It doesn't seem like maybe the math adds up to him having a roster spot, but he's playing great.
I'd like to see him make this team because he really deserves it, but it's just, again, for the roster reasons, you look at Brock Holt. I mean, he's going to make this team. He's arguably the best utility guy in baseball right now, and he's a left-handed hitter, and he plays all the same positions, plus a couple more than Marco does. And then so you say, okay, who's going to be the 25th man? Well, Josh Rutledge is a right-handed hitter that they took in the Rule 5 draft. They really like the way he hits left-handed hitters. They like the job he was doing for them last year until he hurt his knee. And he's really a good guy to put in there against lefty at third base because Pablo, one thing about Pablo, his strength is really not at the right-handed hitter. So that's why Rutledge right now, to me, is a little bit better fit on the roster than Marco Hernandez, which is a shame because, you hear John Farrell saying things like, a lot of our talent evaluators think Marco Hernandez could actually be an everyday player.
So the one thing he gives you is brain insurance. If you did happen to have an injury to a Dustin Pedroia, to a Xander Bogart, to a Pablo Sandoval, you have this guy who the Red Sox think he could be ready to take every day at bat. So that's exciting. But, yeah, it's hard to see him making the opening day rush just the way it plays out right now.
Yeah, hey, you have to have more than 25 to get through a 162-game season. So good to have a guy like that down in Pawtucket that's ready at a moment's notice. On to some guys that have struggled a little bit. Tyler Thornburg was obviously a big addition in the offseason, Ian. The plan was that he would just be plugged right into that setup role, take over the eighth inning, and off we go, setting up Craig Kimbrell. He's struggled so far this spring. Is there still confidence that he's going to figure things out? I know you have an article about the kind of alternative plans if he doesn't figure it out.
Yeah, well, he took a step today. He threw about 20 pitches with a hitter standing there. The hitter didn't swing. It's what they call kind of a controlled setting off the mound. And that is the last step before I think he's going to get back in the game Friday. Whether it's a minor league game or whether he goes to Dunedin to face the Blue Jays. But, so I think that if he can, he like Pomeranz, things would kind of have to go perfectly for him between now and the end of camp for him to be ready to start the season. But, we'll find out more about that this weekend when we see how he's throwing the ball. But it was a concern the way he was throwing the ball his first two outings. It was so concerning that they shut him down, and then he was kind of had to build back up some arm strength. So you do worry a little bit about Thornburg because he's a big part of what they're trying to do in that bullpen. So you kind of want to see him have some success down here before they break camp.
I guess the good news is that other guys behind Thornburg have looked good. Joe Kelly's pitched well. And Heath Embry, I guess, is another guy I mentioned. But Joe Kelly, the reliever, seems like it's really going to be a good story for a full season.
Yeah, I mean, people forget he was their best reliever in that playoff series last year in Cleveland. He was lights out in that series and also pitched great for the Red Sox in September last year. So I think he's kind of taken this role after initially resisting a little bit. It's always hard for any starting pitcher to be told he's not a starter anymore. So I think that was hard for Joe at first, but I think now he's embracing it and realizing that he could really set up well as a reliever.
All right, let's finish with some nice stories, kicker type stories. One is you're in Tampa, Ian. Obviously road trips in spring training that are multiple hours on a bus, the players aren't huge fans of those ones, and John Farrell gave the players a chance to earn their way out of this one, I guess. Just explain this competition that went on. I guess it was Sunday morning, or maybe it was Saturday.
It was Sunday. It was pretty funny. And they actually did this a couple of years ago, too, but a couple of years ago they simply had a shuttle relay race. And the funny thing about 2 years ago was David Ortiz came out in a Foot Locker referee jersey, and he refed the thing with a whistle and everything. And that
was because he wasn't making the trip regardless.
Yeah, because he was not making the trip. So that was pretty funny. But this year they did this whole thing where not only did they have the race, but they started with throwing accuracy competitions on the field. They had like a square on a mesh net that they had to throw the ball into, and pitchers were doing bunting accuracy drills. So they did all these drills, and they were broken up into two separate teams. One of them was captained by Dustin Pedroia, and the other one was captained by Chris Young and Rick Porcello. And by the time they got to the obstacle relay, they were tied. You know, so it's kind of almost like it was rigged, so they would be in a tie. So the relay slash obstacle course was dead. And it was really spirited. Guys were going crazy. They were screaming. They were yelling. And Pedroia's team had a big lead, and then they lost it, and they ended up losing it. But it turns out it was a scam, though, Tim, because I get up here to Tampa today expecting to see Dustin Pedroia, expecting to see Mitch Moreland, expecting to see Hanley Ramirez, and these guys didn't make the trip after all. So I guess John Farrell just kind of wanted to scare them into thinking they were making the trip if they lost. But he did make them sweat it out because their names were on the travel list. But we get up here today, and Dustin Pedroia and Moreland and Hanley did get the day off, even though they were on the losing team. So I'm sure some of the guys who are on the winning team, guys like Chris Young and Brock Holt and Rick Porcello, they might have something to say about that when they see that these guys didn't serve their punishment.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some fun that comes from that. And it's good. We're at that point in spring training where the grind is definitely upon these guys with a couple of weeks to go. So having something like that is great. One other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on was the Sox dedicated practice field this week as well. The Frank Malzone, a longtime member of the organization. And I know a lot of the old time guys like Tiant was there and Jim Rice and Dwight Evans were all on hand for that. Can you just sum up who Frank Malzone was for anyone who doesn't know?
Yeah, I mean, Frank Malzahn is that guy who's a little bit lost in Red Sox history because he came along like after Ted Williams and right before the impossible dream in 67. So he kind of like in that era where the Red Sox were really struggling, but he was arguably their best player, you know, in those, late 50s, early 60s. This guy was maybe the best defensive third baseman in team history, also a pretty good hitter, and, you know, made a few All-Star teams, won a few Gold Gloves, and spent like close to 70 years with the Red Sox, just as an instructor, as a scout, and was kind of a legend around these parts. Not quite as outgoing as Johnny Pesky, so maybe you didn't hear about him quite as much, but to hear Jim Rice and Dwight Evans talk yesterday about the impact that Frank Malzahn made on them at spring training, you know, going over fundamentals and just every last detail. That's why it's so fitting that they put a field for Frank Malzahn at the spring training complex, because he talked to a lot of people and that was his favorite time of year, just to work with these guys on the very fundamental, mundane things about the game, but things that you need to be a great player. Both Dwight and Jim were very good talking about that yesterday.
Excellent story, and the Red Sox obviously always do a great job embracing their history and embracing their past, and just one more example here. This has been MLB.com Extras, a Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.